LA officials are bracing for the release of a report due at the end of the month that's likely to show little to zero progress in reining in homelessness, despite the fact that we've spent $619 million last year alone to combat the crisis. It is not making it any better at all. The LA Times reports that the bulk of the money from the city's funding from Measure Triple H passed in 2016 is being used on housing projects that have not opened yet.
It's a kickback to developers.
Well, the shelter expansion program that they promised us produced just two facilities with room for 147 people.
And that cost $77 million. We could have given each of those hobos 50 grand.
Meanwhile, just 20% of those being placed in shelters by the county's short-term rental subsidy program are able to find permanent housing. Officials claim their hands are tied and blame the inflow of people being pushed out by rising rents and the lack of affordable housing. Again, though, that's a BS answer, because if you're normal and functioning and you lose your job, you surf on couches. You live in a converted garage. You live in a two-bedroom apartment.
You don't go under the freeway.
Well,
this
is
the, and this is a choice for so many of them, in the sense that even if you offered them housing, they don't want it.
No, they don't.
Mental illness and drugs.
Exactly.
They don't want to shower. They don't want to talk to anybody. But when the head of the Homeless Services Authority doesn't understand or won't admit what the real problem is, how are we supposed to fix it?
You could double the amount of money they're spending and you'd still have the same problem. Joining us to talk about this is the professor at Chapman University, author of The Human City, Urbanism for the Rest of Us, and a colleague of mine at the Southern California Newspaper Group, Joel Kotkin. Good morning, Joel.
Nice to be here.
So all of these stories are just appalling. The fact that our police officers are getting MRSA because the homeless are essentially infecting their police stations. We now are spending $619 million in L.A. alone, and the problem is getting worse. What is your take on all of this?
Well, I think there are several things. First of all, it's part of a continuum. Housing is extremely expensive. That certainly causes a problem. We have very high crowding. We don't generate jobs that pay enough for people to basically be able to afford a place. You know, some of the people that we had here in Orange County that were living at the river were actually people with full-time jobs at Disney. I mean, so you have this extreme group of people that you've been talking about. And then you've got some people who are just, you know, they're not able to make enough money to afford rent. And so it's a huge continuum. But there's also obviously policy. I mean, there are other states like Utah who have taken a very much stronger comprehensive approach and have obviously tapped into the resources of the nonprofit world and have really made an impact. We aren't making any kind of impact. I have lived in Los Angeles 40 years. I am astounded every time I go into old neighborhoods that I used to hang out in to see the homeless everywhere. One of my students just did an amazing little video showing the luxury apartments in Hollywood and the homeless living around them. It's on newgeography.com. And you're just looking there and you say, why would I spend $3,000 a month for a one-bedroom apartment when I get out and I'm stepping over
homeless people?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I don't know. I mean, maybe some people think it's quaint, but, you know, but I can tell you, I experienced this in Mumbai. I never thought I'd experience it in Los Angeles.
Wow. You see video or movie depictions of Mumbai, and I think that's a place I could never go. It's so crowded. It's crazy. There's people living on the streets. But you're saying it's right here. And I think, you know, for so many of us, like, we're in a beautiful city, Culver City. And when we get on the on-ramp to go to the 10 freeway, there are many people that are living underneath that on-ramp. And I see the same people on a daily basis. Every single day they're out there panhandling for money.
The guy with the compassion sign who's drinking a 40 of Heineken.
Yeah, that's the guy I see every day. You know what I do? I just take off my hat because I'm bald.
How about the methed out guy trying to sell you bottles of water from that cooler that's definitely got staph infections in it?
Well, I think you're also talking about this another thing that you find in third world cities where I've worked, and that's where you actually have diseases that we thought didn't even exist anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, you have typhus and all sorts of concerns about diseases that we didn't think we had anymore. But, you know, if you're going to have third world conditions, no matter how wealthy some people are, you're going to be afflicted with all the negatives of a third world city. And that's what we're experiencing, particularly in L.A., but also even in parts of Orange County.
Now, Joel, you are an expert on geography. And so I think this is an important question for the state of California to wrestle with because it's a reality. And that is, if Hollywood looks like that and downtown L.A. and Venice and the San Fernando Valley look like that, and we are increasingly turning to a culture where people are working from home, they're telecommuting, they are working on their laptops, they're working on their smartphones, and they don't have to go into the traditional office like the man in the gray flannel suit used to. At what point do people say, and I ask this because I did it myself, I work here in Los Angeles, but I didn't buy my house here because I know they're going to continue to soak homeowners with parcel taxes and increased sales taxes, you
garage
name it,
taxes.
They'll tax it. I bought my house in Palm Springs in Riverside County, and I go there on the weekends, and I rent here. And if my job goes away here, guess what? I go away too, because you don't have to live here anymore. And if you don't have to live here, you don't have to live around this stuff, then you're going to go someplace where they don't put up with it.
Well, particularly what we're seeing in the demographics in the migration, it's not so much the 20-somethings. You know, my student who filmed this amazing little video, basically, you know, she's in her 20s. I'm not sure she's going, you know, I think she's shocked by it, but I don't know if it would determine where she would live or not live. On the other hand, if you're a young family, you have children, you certainly don't want your children around this kind of social, you know, dystopia, which is really what it is. And you don't want them to be exposed to diseases that you know really belonged in the Middle Ages.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, fundamentally, what this is going to do is continue to build what we've been seeing throughout California, particularly in the coast. Middle class families leave because fundamentally, and this relates to your comment about the telecommuting. If I can do the kind of work I do, and I can do it in a place where I can have a single family house and I can have a backyard. My kids can go to a good school and safe, and I don't have to smell poop every time I walk out. You know, it's going to be kind of irresistible. Look, I think California, naturally speaking, is the greatest place in the world to live, and I've traveled all over. But it is tragic to see what we're doing, tragic to see that we seem to be unable to come up with solutions to these problems, which other places seem to have done a better job with.
In the next 5-10 years, where do you think we're going to see a population explosion, a spike in real estate prices? Is it going to be those secondary cities? Is it going to be
like a Palm Springs?
Yeah, like a Palm Springs or resort town, maybe like Hawaii, I don't know. Or is it all going to go to the Sun Belt in the Southeast?
Well, what we're certainly seeing is, and this is something actually I've been studying recently, movement to what we call second-tier cities, you know, your Indianapolises of the world, Orlando. Certainly the Sun Belt moved to Dallas and Houston and Atlanta. You know, that's going to continue. Those regions will continue to gain people. But I think there's going to be a considerable movement into these second-tier cities that are more affordable. And in a funny way, the success of the Sun Belt cities like Dallas, where prices are beginning to rise a bit, people are starting to say, well, maybe I can go to Kansas City and it will be more affordable. Fundamentally, middle-class families want a middle-class family standard of living. Yes, there's always going to be a small group of people who somehow find it exciting to be around, homeless people and all the sort of, drama of life. But as people get into their 30s and 40s, they start thinking about protecting themselves and protecting their children. I think you're going to see this movement continue. And the fact that a city like San Francisco, with incredible wealth, has, if anything, a worse problem than we do, means that money is not necessarily the way to solve the problem. You have to use money intelligently. And so far, we're not doing it.
At what point do the public employee unions step in and either take them to court or just put the political pressure on? Because they're frequently the biggest campaign contributors or among the biggest campaign contributors in city elections, and say, you have to clean these encampments out because our police officers are getting sick. The people that we're sending in to clean up the encampments are getting sick. We had a city attorney in downtown L.A. who got infected with typhus because of the encampments and the rodents that brought it over. At what point do the unions put their foot down?
Well, this is going to become a big issue over time. And the problem has been the unions, the public employee unions in particular, are part of this whole sort of intersectionality. You can never criticize anyone else who's part of this sort of large coalition of the, I guess, the self-described oppressed. Although I don't know why public employees would feel that way. But fundamentally, they are going to have to start to demand things, not just with this. They have to start looking at, do we want huge populations of undocumented people coming in? Do we, you know, they also have to deal with the consequences of that. And obviously, many people, the public employees are human beings. They own homes. They have to deal with these things in their own neighborhoods. And I what you wonder is, will the leadership of those unions stand up for their people, or will they stand up for what is politically correct as opposed to what's best for their members?
All right. Joel Kotkin, professor at Chapman University, author of The Human City, Urbanism for the Rest of Us, columnist at my newspaper group, the Southern California Newspaper Group. Thank you so much for stopping by this morning. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Joel.
Thank you. My pleasure.
It's 7:21. Let's take a look at the roads.